ABC Radio brings you recorded highlights of an address delivered today by Attorney General Robert Kennedy before some 5,000 college students working for the government during the summer holidays. This is Ed Birch in Washington. Mr. Kennedy is the second government official to address the summer employees in what is known as a White House seminar. Its purpose is to persuade at least some of these students to choose a career in the federal government after their college days. The Attorney General opened with a brief address to his audience.
With all the problems that are facing all of us all over the globe, that if young people particularly do not take an active role in politics, do not take an active role in their community, then the whole country's going to suffer. That's really the fundamental issue, and I think that's what the difference that President Kennedy made, because he attracted young people, and just not young people in age, but young people in spirit, with imagination and ideas, whether it be Abel Harriman or whether it be somebody who's 24, 25 years of age, who came to work for government for the first time, who had some ideas about what needed to be done. Maybe not the right ideas always, but had some imagination about how things could be tackled, and so that, and realized that what we needed in the United States and what we need throughout the rest of the world is just to face up to some of these problems. That's the first step. You can act as if the problems don't exist and you can put them under a rug someplace and feel that they're going to go away, or you're going to hand them over to your children, or you're going to hand them over to the next political person, figure that comes in and takes over your job. Or you can face up to them and say, this is a problem. What are we going to do with it? We're not going to be able to solve it, perhaps, but we're going to be able to deal with it. Problems aren't going to go away, not going to disappear. Nothing that we could do, unless you want to have a worldwide war, is going to make communism disappear. Nothing's going to make Castro disappear. But you can face it. You can start to discuss it. Nothing's going to make our civil rights difficulties disappear, but you can face them. You can start to discuss them. You can decide what you had to do to deal with them. And that's really what was important, and what really was needed in the United States, and what is being started by President Kennedy and continued by President Johnson. And that's where all of you play such an important role. Emerson once said that God gave to each of us the choice between truth and repose. Take what you please, you cannot have both. And really, that's what's the fundamental issue. And if we face up to the problems that we have, if we realize our responsibility to those who are not as well off as we, as President Kennedy said, if we cannot help the many that are poor, we cannot save the few that are rich. And it exists here in the United States, it exists all around the globe, that we have because of our advantages, we have a fundamental responsibility and obligation, not because of charity, but a fundamental obligation and responsibility to others in our own states, in our own communities, in our own country, who are less well off. And we also have this fundamental responsibility to other countries. And so it starts with taking an active interest, like all of you. Take an active interest in what needs to be done and the problems that exist, and what solutions we can find. Maybe we're not going to find the correct ones, and we all make mistakes because we're human, but at least to face up to it and do the best that we can.
After his address, Mr. Kennedy submitted to questions from the audience. It was the first time the Attorney General had faced questioners since his return from a European tour and the passage of the Civil Rights Bill. The queries ranged from Mr. Kennedy's future to the civil rights question in Mississippi, and opened with one on whether or not he would take the vice presidential spot on the Democratic ticket.
My name is Royce Givens. I'm from Virginia, and I go to Wake Forest College. Mr. Kennedy, there has been much talk in the news, besides the Republican convention, about your political intentions in the coming Democratic convention. Are you planning, or is there any plans for you to run for vice president, or will you go back to Massachusetts and run, or stay in the Attorney General's office?
I think probably a no to all three of them. I don't have, first, just fundamentally and basically, I haven't made up my mind what I will do. I don't know. I said that I was going to stay on as Attorney General till after the election, which I suppose means November, December, or January, or until President Johnson selects his new cabinet. And what I will do after that, I don't know yet.
Russell Osmond, I'm originally from Wyoming. I go to Connecticut Wesleyan University. Mr. Attorney General, on your future, again, I'd like to ask, concerning the recent article in Newsweek. It mentioned, and I quote, that there is a new fatalism in Robert Kennedy.
Now, it's a new what?
Fatalism. And I'd like you to comment on this, if you would, please.
I don't know quite how to way to begin about that.
Sir, mainly I'm interested in whether or not the article, particularly in Newsweek and other things that have been said about you, are true. I don't want to believe it.
I think it depends a little bit how you look at it. The nice thing is... the Newsweek article does not indicate my... does not correctly portray my feelings in connection with this matter. Now, as far as other articles, some of them are more correct and some of them are less accurate. I'd be glad to answer. If you ask me a specific question of what you'd like to know yourself or anybody, I'd be glad to answer it. I think it's difficult when you try to put it just in a few words, as I think that article attempted to do, and then put quotation marks around matters, which are a little bit more difficult, and they're not taken down verbatim, because sometimes it takes a little bit longer to explain some of these matters than that article seemed to indicate.
You partially answered my question in answering the first question, but the last quote of the article, in quotation marks, was, it quoted you as saying, I have this feeling that I'm going to end up in government. And, you've sort of proven
this.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, shall I answer that question? I would rather work for the government than do anything else, and I can't see myself, going into business, and I haven't got any great interest in going back into law or going practicing law. I've had such a success in government as a lawyer. And so I fundamentally, I just much rather work for the government. Now, how that's going to be resolved, I just don't know. I thought a lot about it back in December and January, and then I decided that I'd try to put off that decision. And every time I start thinking about it again, I decide that I don't really have to make up my mind, so that I'll put it off again. Now, I think that's difficult for people to understand, but I don't really have... If somebody hasn't come to me and said, you've just got to be, for instance, on the vice president, you've just got to be vice president. I mean, a few friends. But
thank you, sir.
So I haven't had to make that decision, so I haven't made that decision. Now, as far as what I'm going to do with running for office later on, I haven't had to make the decision. So the only decision I made it was the fact that I would stay and remain through the year, and that I wouldn't stay as Attorney General longer than that period of time. I might say that I had decided really that I wouldn't stay as Attorney General and my brother and I discussed it, so that really wasn't anything new. I just, I've had 4 years, and I think it'd be well if somebody else was Attorney General.
Thank you, sir.
How do I go over there?
Stafford Hutchinson, originally from Texas and Harvard University. Mr. Kennedy, last Friday, the Washington Star reported you as saying, in effect, that the mantle of the energy, idealism, and striving for excellence which characterized the administration of President Kennedy had fallen to you alone. If this is true, I wondered if you might tell us why you feel this way if President Johnson is obviously so dynamic and has had such success with Congress recently.
Well, I didn't say that and never have.
I asked if it was true. I just wondered.
Yeah. Well, I don't know who reported it, and I didn't see that article. And let me just say, I don't talk that way. I don't think that correctly portray. I'll tell you what I think about that. I think that what was involved in all this was more than an individual. It was more than President Kennedy, and it started a long time ago, and it was the energy and efforts of many hundreds of people, or thousands of people within government, and many people who participated in his election all over the country, and were committed to him, and committed, again, not to an individual, John F. Kennedy from Massachusetts, but committed to an ideal, and felt that there could be changes made, and that more effort must be expended, and that differences could be brought about. So that involved thousands and thousands of people across the United States. I think that President Johnson, of course, next to President Kennedy, was the most important figure involved in that kind of an effort. What I would like to do is do whatever I could do to make sure that continued. And I think that anybody whether they live in Texas or whether they live in Massachusetts or whether they live in Wisconsin or whether they live in Pennsylvania or Massachusetts, who were involved with him and involved in this administration, involved with Vice President Johnson, now President Johnson, and felt that there were changes being made and that there were problems that were being faced, would also like to commit themselves to that idealism. That's all I'd like to do, and I think there's an awful lot of other people feel the same way. But that's expressing my feeling about it, and I intend to do whatever I can. Well, I don't know where it's going to all end up, but whatever I can to continue that.
Well, was the star incorrect in saying fallen to you, that you felt that...
I think I answered the question.
All right.
Did that sound like I said it fell to me?
That's all right.
I can't. What am I supposed
to? Number four.
Alan Ogden, University of Virginia. Mr. Kennedy, speaking as a Democrat, whom would you like to see the Republican convention nominate for president?
I'll tell you, I think they're doing so well. I don't want to interfere with them. Now, what am I supposed to do?
I ask you to flash your lights in the back where your microphones are, please, so the Attorney General knows you have a question. That's five or six.
Five or six.
Howard Smuckler, Illinois, Miami University. Many people have accused you of having a personal vendetta against Jimmy Hoffa. Do you think the Justice Department can destroy his power from the outside without the popular support of the union members?
Well, I don't have a personal vendetta against Jimmy Hoffa. And that doesn't do any really good saying it, because I think you have to look at what the facts are. And Attorney General of the United States, and where we find that there's corruption or violation of the law, we're going to make an investigation. And we've been making an investigation of Mr. Hoffa, and matters were presented to a grand jury, and he was indicted down in Nashville, Tennessee, and then there was a hung jury. The judge ordered an investigation, had received information that the jury was fixed. And that matter was investigated and presented to another grand jury. Mr. Hoffa and a number of his colleagues were indicted for fixing the jury. Then came a trial that was scheduled in Nashville, Tennessee, and then the lawyer, that was Mr. Hoffa's lawyer, was then found to be fixing the new jury, plus his assistant lawyer. So then that trial had to be moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and he was tried there, and Mr. Hoffa was convicted for fixing the jury. There have been three other trials since then involving other individuals who are associated with Mr. Hoffa, and they've all been convicted. Four different trials and seven people have been convicted, all with juries and all under the American system. So I would say that. Second thing, as far as the Teamster officials generally, and we've made an effort to deal with corruption in labor management affairs. And we've convicted in the last 3.5 years 106 Teamster officials and financial associates of Mr. Hoffa. So I think that that was important. We've convicted 137 union officials and other unions. But I'm going to continue wherever I find that there's a violation of the law, whether it involves Mr. Hoffa or anybody else, we're going to continue to make an effort, and we're going to continue to work on it. As far as what will happen to the Teamsters Union, I hope that they have honest leadership. It's one of the most powerful unions in the country, and they have some of the best union officials of any union in the United States, as well as some corrupt ones. But they deserve good leadership. I hope that they have good leadership. And I think that if Mr. Hoffa's conviction is affirmed and he's sent to jail, I think it'll be difficult for him to run the union from there. So I think that I think it might take care of itself. Now I'm supposed to do that one over there. There's a light.
Dan O'Flaherty, Williams College, Massachusetts. Mr. Kennedy, why has the Justice Department decided not to send federal marshals to Mississippi?
Well, first, it's the question of what your role is in any state. We are federal marshals. We don't have in the United States a federal police force. Starting days of the Constitution, it was decided that we wouldn't have a federal police force. These matters and responsibilities would be left to the local level. They would be left to the state level, and they would be left in the local communities and cities and villages, that they would have to take the responsibility, that there would not be any federal police force. So that's the first fundamental problem. Marshals are not federal policemen. They can't go out, they can't go and keep law and order. They haven't got that responsibility. Now, if you want to declare martial law and send troops and occupy Mississippi, that's the decision that has to be made. Now, the governor has indicated that he wants to maintain law and order, that they're going to make that kind of an effort. You have to find that law and order is broken down completely in that state, and then make a decision that whether you're going to send troops in and occupy that state or the part of that state. And I don't think that the situation as of the moment supports that kind of action. I'm pledged to uphold the Constitution of the United States. I suppose that there's a popular demand that you take that kind of action in Mississippi, then you go ahead and do it. I don't think, under my oath of office and under the facts as they exist at the present time, that I'd be warranted in making that kind of a recommendation to the President of the United States. And that's why I haven't done it.
Bert Fuhr, Brandeis University, Chevy Chase, Maryland. Mr. Attorney General, what is your opinion of the proposed Becker Amendment for school prayers?
Well, I think people should pray, and if they pray in school, they should do it quietly. Right back there.
Robert Z. Polt, University of Maryland, State of Maryland. What do you feel is the real increased powers that the Office of Attorney General has acquired with the passage of the Civil Rights Bill? Do you feel that this office will lead to a police state, as has been charged by anti-civil rights politicians?
No, I don't. I think that we have certain responsibilities that have been given to us under the law. I think fundamentally the right to sue where individuals denied access to public accommodations, which include hotels, motels, places of public amusement, department stores. The individual can take action now under the Civil Rights Bill, and also the federal government, under certain restrictions, the Department of Justice can take action. I think that's important. Also, the other major authority that has been given to us has been in school cases. The 1954 decision of the Supreme Court really has not brought about a great number of high percentage of the schools being desegregated. Now authority is given to the federal government to bring these matters to the attention of the court, and in some of the school districts, which are still segregated, to bring about it so that Negro citizens can attend the school of their choice. I don't think that creates a police state. Those are fundamental powers, new powers, that are given to the Department of Justice and the Attorney General. I don't think that establishes a police state. Secondly, I think that it's important. I think it would be better if we didn't have the Civil Rights Bill. I think it would be important that it wasn't necessary, because I think it's much better that these matters be handled at a local level and not at the federal level. And every time since I've been Attorney General, where we've had a problem in the field of civil rights, we've gone to the local authority and we brought to their attention what we have uncovered and asked them to remedy the situation themselves rather than have the federal government involved. And I would think in a high percentage of cases that has been done and nobody's ever heard about it, and that's the way it should be handled. We have only brought action, only taken action ourselves, where the local authorities have refused for one reason or another to take action. And I think that procedure and practice should continue. And that's why I say I think it would have been better even if we didn't have the Civil Rights Bill, because I think it would be better if the local authorities handled it. But they weren't. In some areas in the United States, it was obvious that they would not handle it. I mean, when you consider there are 47 counties in the state of Mississippi and only 1% of the Negroes are registered to vote, and when you consider that the fact that there are Negroes being killed in Vietnam now for all of us, not just for Negro citizens in the United States, but for white citizens as well, and yet they are denied the right to stay at a hotel and denied the right to bring their children to a restroom, it's inequitable and needs to be remedied. And where the states and localities wouldn't take the action themselves, I think the federal government has to, because I think if Negro is a citizen of Mississippi, he's also a citizen of the United States. And I think the time is long past when that kind of action is necessary. But we turned down greater authority in some of these fields in the bill that was recommended originally by the House, which I think would have given too much authority to the Department of Justice and the Attorney General. And I went up and testified against it, because it was not just in the area of civil rights, but many other areas, and I think it could have led to abuse. But this bill does not, and I think it's important for a remedy injustices that have existed too long, and secondly, indicating to the Negro population in the United States that the majority of white people are willing to take action to redress their grievances, and I think that's important.
Bob Feldman, Alabama. I attend the University of Alabama and like to make a short comment. Contrary to what Governor Wallace might think or say, I'd personally like to welcome you in Alabama at any time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can I just say I appreciate that. And it's more important really than me, isn't I appreciate it personally, but it's really gets back to this same point. I think it's good that Governor Wallace comes up and speaks in the North, and that he speaks at universities. Because first, I think it stimulates thought, and you know, but really in a serious way, because he would go and speak at a university, and somebody would get up and say, well, I'm for civil rights, and I'm for the Civil Rights Bill. And then he'd ask them whether they ever read the Civil Rights Bill, or whether they knew what was in the Civil Rights Bill. And then he'd describe what was in the Civil Rights Bill. And the reason that he had an effect, not just around the country, but among students, was the fact that very few people really knew what they were talking about. Everybody knew sort of in general terms they were in favor of civil rights. But when he would describe what was in the Civil Rights Bill, there wouldn't be people who would get up and say, that's not what was in the Civil Rights Bill. I'll tell you frankly, if I heard him the way I heard him, and I heard him on television describe the Civil Rights Bill, I'd be against the Civil Rights Bill.
In the second of a series of White House seminars, Attorney General Robert Kennedy has addressed some 5,000 college students holding government jobs during the summer vacation. The purpose of the seminars is to explain the workings of the various government agencies. ABC Radio has brought you recorded highlights of an address and a question and answer period by Attorney General Robert Kennedy before some 5,000 students at the second of a series of White House seminars. This is Ed Birch in Washington. Flair reports today. Today on the ABC Radio Network.